Welcome to Landon and Jim versus the World, brought to you by Bobby Rahal Honda of State College. Visit us at our West College Avenue showroom or BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com. Allow us to demonstrate our commitment to excellence. Bobby Rahal Honda of State College, driven by a higher standard.
Hello and welcome to Landon and Jim versus the World. I'm Jim Galante. He is Landon Tengwall. Our show is brought to you by Bobby Rahal Honda of State College. It's the place to get all the great deals on all your Honda needs, whether it's the Ridgeline truck, the Accord Hybrid, the CRV, which is what I drive and love, or if you're looking for a Honda certified used car, they are all there at Bobby Rahal Honda of State College. Check out their showroom on West College Avenue, or online you can go to BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com. Landon, it's football season. They're out there practicing. It's the season.
It is. It's exciting, Jim. It's Christmas in August. But the season is approaching quickly. I think quicker than a lot of us expect. So it'll be here before we know it, and we'll be kicking off versus West Virginia.
Can't wait for it, Landon. Let me just ask, how much do you miss it right now, the training camp started?
Definitely some aspects to miss the camaraderie, but the all day at the facility is not too missed. Spending all day, and then the bones, the all the aches, all that type of stuff. You know, definitely don't miss all that. There is obviously a piece of playing ball that I miss, but it is the toughest time of the year for the football players. I will say that
it is, and I think the 90-degree heat helps that also. Calm you that you're not having to go through it.
Fair point. I'm in AC the whole time doing shows like this, so that is a little bit easier.
All right. Hey, how about we start with this, Landon? It's time for Landon's Stat of the Week.
That's definitely a record, Jim. Under 2 minutes, we're going straight into the Stat of the Week.
There's always demand for it. May as well give the people what they demand, Landon.
It's a fair point. The biggest news in college football is that the NCAA is going to go after Michigan, and they were handed a draft recently. And so this is where the Stat of the Week comes in, too. And I got Jim Harbaugh before and after Connor Stallions being on the Michigan staff. Before Connor Stallions was on the Michigan staff, Harbaugh was 49-26 at Michigan. After Connor Stallions was on the staff, Harbaugh went 40-3. I'm not saying, you know, they had two coordinators go to the offense and defense coordinator, both went to the NFL. They both got jobs. So I'm not saying they had a lot of talent there. So I'm not, you know, saying discrediting them in that instance at all. Although I think, you know, if you're a defensive coordinator and you know what play it is half the time, you might find yourself in the NFL pretty quickly, Jim. I don't know. But I just think that's pretty significant. And I think that kind of lines up right when J.J. McCarthy started to ball out and that type of stuff. So like I said, I'm not insinuating that's the reason, you know, there was such a significant change in his win-loss record. But 49-26 to 40-3 is pretty significant, Jim.
It sounds to me like you are insinuating that, Landon.
I might be insinuating something. I don't know. Well, I'm all over Twitter, and I've seen, like, videos where – Michigan's playing someone and they run a screen pass, and it's like both DNs, it's like Hutchinson and Ajabo, like both just drop right away. They don't even rush the passer. They don't rush upfield. It's like they're sitting back just like waiting for the screen to come. They make the tackle on the play. It's just really, there's some things that I've seen where it's just like, and I'm not saying, you know, there's other things you can pick up on throughout a game and other film study stuff that can maybe let you know if it's a screen or something like that. But it's just, there's certain things that I've seen that really it's hard to question. And I don't even think it's really a question of if they did it. We know that it happened. But now I think the main question is who knew? And really the true question is how can we prove who knew? And then you got Jim Harbaugh obviously being asked about this. He's in camp with the Los Angeles Chargers right now at the moment. And he said, you know, speaking on the allegations, no one's perfect. If you stumble, you apologize and make it right. Today, I do not apologize. So that was Jim Harbaugh's statement at the Chargers training camp when he was asked about everything going on.
Well, I find it hard to believe that he would not be aware, especially because current coach Sherrone Moore He's now implicated in this. And they apparently have evidence that he deleted many text messages the very day that this went public. The incident that Stallions, the controversy blew up that day, and he deleted a whole bunch of texts. That's pretty damning right there, that Sharon Moore, the offensive coordinator, knew.
Yeah,
and if the coordinators know, how could the head coach not know?
I mean, that's my thing. I mean, it's, you know, plausible deniability, but it gets to a point where it's like that just – it's so hard to believe that that'd be happening. And you're going to tell me, so there's this lone – I mean, that was kind of the Michigan's whole thing. Hey, it's this lone wolf. He's acting on his own. He did this. Okay, so you got this guy on your staff that acted on his own. He didn't tell any coaches, any players. He was doing all this just for what, for his own good? You don't think he was letting Aiden Hutchinson know on the side, hey, you know, this is past, this is, they had signals, that type of thing, allegedly. You know, it's just one of the kind of throw there that in the end. But it's just, it's unbelievable to me. And correct me if I'm wrong. Do we know if those 52 text messages, were they all deleted that were deleted? Were they all to Connor Stallions? Or was that just deleted text messages in general?
I don't know. It wasn't stated, at least in the information that I read, Landon. But I don't know about how often do you go into your phone and start deleting mass number of messages, okay?
Yeah, only when I've done something bad.
There you go. That's more proof. If you don't want a trail, that's when you do it. And, you know, just like, hey, must have been just a coincidence that the one loss record improved so much after Connor Stallions. I'm sure it's just coincidence that Sharon Moore deleted all these text messages the very day the issue goes public.
Yeah, you know, it's wrong. And honestly, Jim Harbaugh, man, I mean, that's pretty crazy. I mean, he hit left town and stuck Sharon Moore with the bag. I mean, it was that's kind of messed up. And just to give the official headline, by the way, there was 7 members from the 2023 football program at Michigan accused of violating the NCAA rules in a draft sent from the NCAA to Michigan. So there was 6 other people, including Sharon Moore, named in this. And I believe 2 of the other people named in that have already been gone. It's Connor Stallions and then one other dude that they fired back when it all happened. But I don't know. I mean, I'm kind of at the point where it's like, how can you say they don't deserve any, you know, a significant punishment that's actually going to harm their program? I mean, and people are saying, oh, you know, this isn't going to happen. There's no way they go that hard, drop the hammer on them. I mean, in college football, when has there ever been anything like this? I mean, this is unprecedented. There's never been an on-the-field scandal in college football, at least in my memory, of something like this to this extent and this calculated. So I just, you know, I think some people are saying, oh, you know, pointing to other instances, the NCAA, oh, they only did this to Kentucky and they only did this to this team. Well, nothing like this has ever happened. We're all talking off-the-field recruiting violations, that type of thing. This is directly impacting the integrity of the game.
You're exactly right. And I'll take a little different angle is what Jim Harbaugh had to say. Now, there's 1,000 different ways for him to handle this when he's asked about it. He could just put it in the rearview mirror. Look, it's a Michigan issue. It's in the past. I am laser focused on the Chargers right now. This is my job. This is what I'm worried about. I can't concern myself. But for him to say, there's no apology here. That, boy, those are words that can really come back to haunt him.
Yeah, I mean, that's just, I mean, obviously, like I said, they were maintaining the whole Connor Stallions was a lone wolf. We had no idea. It's not possible that Jim Harbaugh didn't know. I'm sorry. In my opinion, I just, you know, it's not a definite thing. I just don't see any way he was not made aware. And of course, I think when, you know, when he was most likely made aware, I'm sure he said, you know, I can't have anything to do with this. There can be no even text, no nothing. I mean, I think you got to be smart enough to know that you have to be very careful with that stuff, especially when you're the head man. But clearly Sharon Moore was not too worried about it. And it's one of those things too. It's like, I find funny. It's like deleted text. I mean, those aren't that hard to get back and stuff like that. So I don't know. I'm sure Sharon Moore and company were panicking when all that type of stuff dropped, but I don't see any way that this was not an overall arching something that everybody was kind of collaborating on. You say that this guy was just a lone wolf. I mean, who was sending him out to these games? Who was helping him get on the Central Michigan sideline, which actually we haven't talked about, is that Connor Stallions, there was a photo of someone who looked a lot like Connor Stallions on the Central Michigan sideline, dressed up as a Central Michigan staff member, coach type thing, while they were playing Michigan State. And at the time, wasn't confirmed. Now, in the NCAA report that came out, that was confirmed that he was on the Central Michigan sideline. So, you know, how are things like that, you know, how do they come about without other people knowing? You're telling me Connor Stallions all on his own was able to work that out and get on their sideline in their gear? I mean, it's really crazy. And I've heard there's actually going to be a Netflix documentary that's going to be coming out with Connor Stallions talking in it, being interviewed. So interested to see what's going to happen there. But it's like, how many other things happen that we don't know? I mean, how many other times was Connor Stallions on a different sideline and we just didn't get the correct camera angle or TV copy? And, you know, just didn't see him. But you tell him he was only on one sideline once. I find that hard to believe if that's a method that was working for them.
And it seems as if, you know, this has now reached the point of it. Obviously, it's no doubt something went on. And where the lone wolf thing doesn't pan out for me is it seems now there had to be other members of the staff, the Michigan staff, aware of this and knowing it. And Jim Harbaugh, as the guy in charge, if he didn't know, it means he's running a very loose operation. It means there are staff members who think Coach Harbaugh would be okay with this. He maybe doesn't want to be implicated. We want to keep him at arm's length from it, but we're okay doing it. It's kind of like, you know, when you're the head of the Secret Service agency and it screws up so badly, guess where the buck stops?
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. When you sign up to be the head of something, you are responsible for everybody under you. So at the end of the day, it's almost worse if Harbaugh actually didn't know, which I find completely just not believable. But it's almost worse. That was all happening under your nose, and now you think you can run an NFL program too? That's a question I would ask him. Try to pin him to something. I just think that's pretty ridiculous that something that magnitude could be going on in your, basically under your house, so to speak.
I'm with you on that, Landon. All right, that is it for quarter number one. We got lots more to do when we come back with more Landon and Jim versus the world.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, general manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.
Welcome to Landon and Jim versus the World, brought to you by Bobby Rahal Honda of State College. Visit us at our West College Avenue showroom or BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com. Allow us to demonstrate our commitment to excellence. Bobby Rahal Honda of State College, driven by a higher standard.
Hello and welcome back to Landon and Jim versus the World. He's Landon, I'm Jim. This is quarter number two of our show. Quarter number one, Landon, we took a look into Michigan with the sign-stealing scandal, and, you know, it's still, to me, the part that upsets me is Jim Harbaugh's comments that he has nothing to apologize for, that he's distant enough from what happened. Find that hard to believe. But anyway, time for us to move on. We are right in the middle of the Olympics, Landon. How much of this are you watching?
Decent. I just actually came from the barbershop where I was watching Canada men's basketball play. Oh, completely lost. So they're playing in the quarterfinals right now. I should know that. But I'm going to be honest, I haven't been watching enough, but I have been enjoying it. I saw there was a little bit of back and forth between the U.S. and I believe China, who had the most golds, were kind of going back and forth. A couple days left, but I'm excited as there's more and more, especially like the men's gold games within basketball. I will definitely tune into that. But there's a couple sports, Jim, that honestly, I didn't even know were Olympics, like field hockey. I didn't know they had that in the Olympics. Like there's certain things I'm like, man, I heard they have like underwater sports. Like there's like this underwater, like hockey, like sport. I mean, like there's some crazy stuff that you just didn't even know was an Olympic sport. So that's kind of a fun piece of learning new games.
It really is. Have you seen any of the 3-on-3 basketball?
I actually watched some of the women's with Haley Van Lith. She was on one of the women's team on the USA women's team. But I find that interesting. Would you, obviously there's the whole USA, you know, the classic basketball, but I would find more enjoyment watching Steph Curry, LeBron, and a center go to the 3v3 and let's watch them. You know, it's a little bit more, I don't know, it's a little more like centralized, it's a little more one-on-one when it's in a 3v3 style format. And you get to see a little bit more of the full-on ability of the basketball player. I think that'd be fun.
Did you play much pickup basketball?
I played a little bit of pickup. I played AAU, though, for about 3 years. If, you know, everybody plays AAU basketball at some point, it feels like. So I played a little bit of competitive basketball in middle school before I went all the way into football.
Well, the reason why I ask that is on the playgrounds, 3-on-3 half court is common. Mm. It's, you know, that's how you play. And it's, to me, it's fascinating then to watch it and how they do and how they took the concept of it. Now they have a 12-second shot clock. So the game's got to be fast. Okay. Mm-hmm. So there's some interesting things to do in the rules, but to your point about the, how bad the American team is, and you have all of the, not all, you have the elite NBA players playing on the 5-man normal basketball team. Why can't you get additional NBA players to play in on the 3-on-3? I mean, there's Jimmer Fredette, who's, you know, many of us remember, very good shooter and all that, but he's way past his prime. He's, you know, hardly one of the best players. I mean, you only have 12 American players on the 5-man team. How about getting players 13, 14, and 15 to play on the 3-on-3 team?
Yeah, I think there's a reason that Jimmer Fredette is there, and it's because nobody else wants to do that. I think that'd be a nice smack in the face going to the Olympics and not being to be a part. If you're an NBA player, I didn't go to be a part of the true, you know, the USA team. I was the 3v3 team. And it's like, okay, never mind. Sorry. You know, you're not. It just doesn't have the same allure. I really do think that's what it is. Too many guys, that's like, they're like, nah, that's disrespectful to me. If I'm not on the USA team, I'm not going at all. So that's my kind of reason as to why, someone like Jimmer Fredette, who's washed up, is able to go there and play and start for the U.S.
Well, I'm wondering if there'll be the point where a couple of players, buddies, maybe it needs the NBA's blessing also.
Yeah.
You know, the NBA blesses their players going. It's good for them PR-wise, makes the game a worldwide game. I wonder if they need to bless this to make it happen. Commissioner Silver, go bless this, okay, so we could get the best players there and create more interest in it. Because I think the 3-on-3 game could be really fun and exciting.
Yeah, I think you're, I mean, even like we're talking about, someone is an old and washed up, we keep bagging on Jimmer Fredette, but like grab three random players from like the Hornets anywhere, and they're better than the team we have now. Like you're saying, they don't even have to be the 13th, 14th, 15th best player in the NBA. Grab three active NBA players, and they're probably doing better than the 3v3 team that we have for the USA right now. So you know, you're right. Maybe hopefully a couple guys get together and want to get behind that. But I think they'd have to be compensated and in the media light have to get a lot of love for doing that. But like I said, I still think it's a little bit of a smack in the face having to play on the 3v3 team and not be on the regular USA team.
Again, all it takes is four guys. There's a 3-man team and one man on the bench. That's all it would take. I think it would be worthwhile. And there's not many players you would have to compensate to do it. I think it would be great for the game, but That's me, Landon. But I do enjoy the 3-on-3 game. It is fun to watch. There are a couple other things, though, going on in the Olympics. Every time, there's always something fascinating. There's controversy. There's different things. And a couple things I'd like to pick out. I don't know if you saw this, the photo finish in the 100-meter dash. Did you realize that the second-place runner, his foot crossed the line before the winner's foot? But the rule is, it's got to be your torso.
Yeah, because the whole arena reacted, and they didn't think that that Lyles won, and that was kind of the whole consensus. It felt like right away, and then they corrected it and said it was clear that he did win, and it was just crazy for me to see that final photo where the fourth guy was so close to, he was that close to first place, and he didn't even medal. Like it was just a photo finish of not only first and second place, but third, fourth, and fifth. I mean, it was like all right there. So it really, you say football is a game of inches. Well, track and field, I guess that's a game of something smaller. We'll call millimeters, centimeters, something like that. But no, it is. It's crazy.
Well, just remember, he's only got 4 years to wait to do it again for the next opportunity. So I'm with you. I can't imagine the heartbreak of missing it by that much. But again, these rules, you always see them leaning forward with their chest. Never really dawned on me that it's like, hey, your foot crossing doesn't count.
Yeah, I'm curious that. I wonder if it's the same thing for the 40-yard dash, because that's kind of the same, and that's why guys get so injured actually so frequently when they run the 40-yard dash, because they try to do that lean forward, and you put your body in a bad position, and then you pull your hamstring because you're putting some bad stress on your legs. So I guess that's kind of where that all stems from, now that I think about it, because that would happen so frequently. And then on Tesla, I mean, that was a great finish, and obviously USA getting the gold there. But then I think Sha'Carri Richardson in the women's, who was thought she was going to absolutely dust everybody. I mean, I was watching that live. She ended up getting this. She got silver. She came in second, but she should have won, but she got out really, really slow. I don't know if you watched that, but got out really bad and just wasn't able to make it all the way back up. But overall, I mean, hey, silver and gold, you can't be too mad at that. And I think we still have the 400-meter relays coming up, which I know the women are expected. USA women team is kind of expected to dust everybody, but should be exciting to watch. We're normally pretty good in track.
There's a few other things and highlights from the sport. And to be honest, I haven't watched nearly as much as I have in the past, but the next morning you pick up and see what's making news. What are the articles about? What are the highlights? And it's really funny to me. They pick up in some of these obscure sports and it turns into a meme or a GIF or GIF. There's the pistol shooter from Turkey. I think he's like the hero of every old guy.
I know. I like. Yeah, you're right. He is a meme everywhere. Because there's the one dude that's shooting, and he has all the gear. His torso's completely flexed one way. Body, all this stuff set up. And then there's the dude from Turkey, just one arm up, no gear, just firing away shots. And correct me if I'm wrong. He got silver, right?
Yes, he did.
Yeah, that's. That's one. That's plus one for the old guys.
It is plus. It's wearing blue jeans, a t-shirt, one hand in the pocket as he's firing, and then they say after he's done shooting, his first question is, "Where can I go get a smoke?"
That's Turkey right there for sure.
It is. I think it was funny, and there's a lot of those. And then there was the female shooter from South Korea who just has this really cool look to her with the little, dark glasses. Yeah. But she has her daughter's stuffed elephant strapped to her side she's shooting for good luck.
That's pretty cute. I missed that one. See, these are the fun tidbits that I enjoy about the Olympics.
It is. And those are sports that, we're not going to see them again for another 4 years. And so for those folks to get an opportunity, for some fame, for some glory. But then there's, some other things that some of the highlights. I don't know if you saw this in ping pong, table tennis. All right. There's a shot called they called it a snake shot. All right. Mm-hmm. Did you see it?
No, I haven't seen this.
So you know how fast they go at that level at table tennis. I mean,
right.
Just,
oh, yeah, boom. It's insane.
It's crazy. So the one player hits a shot, hits on the other player's side, then goes over, and it's like falling. It's now he's reaching underneath the table, hits a shot from like underhanded, puts so much spin on the ball, it goes over the net. But instead of bouncing forward, he had so much spin on it, it literally bounced back onto his side of the table.
I'm going to have to check that one out. Now you got me intrigued to get a real visual at this.
You know, it's funny because I've played ping pong, not that I'm good at it, but yeah. I know there's been times you go back, you're underneath the table, and you could kind of hit it with a lot of spin on it, where it'll hit the table and go left or go right. With this, he had the spin on it, so it literally came back at him. His opponent could not even extend over the table to reach it. I've never seen anything like it, Landon. And that's the kind of thing you see in the Olympics, because that's the only place you'll see, you know, I'll ever watch ping pong on television is when it comes to the Olympics. All right, I kind of cut you off there. We are coming to the end of the segment, Landon. But we've got lots more to talk about when we get back for quarter number three.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, General Manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.
Welcome to Landon and Jim versus the World, brought to you by Bobby Rahal Honda of State College. Visit us at our West College Avenue showroom or BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com. Allow us to demonstrate our commitment to excellence. Bobby Rahal Honda of State College, driven by a higher standard.
Hello and welcome back to Landon and Jim versus the World. It's quarter number three, brought to you by Bobby Rahal Honda of State College. That's where I got my great CRV Honda. They have some great deals going this month with super interest rates on the Ridgeline truck as low as 1.9%. Also on the Accord and the Accord Hybrid. So check them out. You want to hit their showroom. It's on West College Avenue in State College. Or go online to BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com. See their great inventory there. All right, Landon, we're talking about the Olympics. And it's amazing how many different stories there are going on. And we talked last week, I think, a bit about the Olympic Village and what they're dealing with. They have cardboard beds going on. They have vegan food, so it's hard to get meat or dairy. They run out of whatever they do have. So a lot of stuff going on. You have another story from the Olympic Village.
I do, yeah. So Henrik Christensen is a Norwegian swimmer, and he is currently going viral on TikTok and a couple other social media platforms because he is essentially stealing all of the chocolate muffins out of the Olympic Village buffet. And they start other athletes started to take notice. It started to be reported on. On NBC, all that type of stuff. Now he is TikTok. I think he's grown like almost a million followers because of it. And now he makes all these videos each day with just a bunch of chocolate muffins from the buffet. So people taking advantage, I guess, from a marketing standpoint, take notes. If you're teaching a marketing class, Henrik Christensen's doing a good job there branding himself. So, yeah, quirky stuff like that. That's what I mean. This is the type of stuff that I like from the Olympics, these really dumb little fun facts.
What's amazing to me is if all it takes is stealing muffins from the buffet to make yourself famous, Landon, I should be famous.
You should have been famous a long time ago, Jim, back when you were wow, I should know the name of your hometown by now. Wait, it's on the tip of my tongue. Oh, I lost it, Jim. Guys, I hear it every time that me and Jim have a lunch. I can't believe I'm drawing a blank on this. I can't.
Everyone in Berwick is now upset with
oh,
me.
Oh, God. All 200 people. They're going to come at me.
We've got a few more than that, Landon. And we got some people there in Berwick who if you don't want to upset, if you know what I mean. And the Galante clan, we had our family reunion over the weekend. So I've got some relatives that won't be too happy with you. But anyway, yes, from way back, you know, taking muffins from the buffet. So I actually saw then online how you can make your own chocolate muffins like they have at the Olympics. They have recipes now out there for them.
I'm telling you, yeah, they're making a lot of money. Whoever's muffins those are directly, they're getting a killing off this dude. But while we're on the topic, as he's a swimmer, I saw this on Twitter. I wanted to share this. And it put it side by side, the men's 100-meter freestyle and it's the, you know, the final event where you're medaling for gold. And it's in L.A. in 1932 and then Tokyo in 2020. And side by side, the last person to finish the 100 meters in 2020 in Tokyo, it took them 47 seconds. The first person that medaled gold back in 1932 in the 100-meter, it took them 58 seconds to get gold. So that means is the slowest person in 2020 was still beating the gold medalist by 11 seconds. And I just thought that was so interesting because that just shows. Now, there's little factors. I'm sure the pools almost make it easier for them. There's stuff like that. But overall, as a whole, that just shows how much better athletes have gotten in general over the past almost 100 years, Jim.
They have, Landon. It's an interesting topic to me, this, and how measurable records and how they've changed and advanced over the years. And there's a lot of different reasons for it. Now, you once told me the story about when you were first playing football, you were a receiver, right?
I was.
Okay, give me like height and weight and age when you were a receiver.
Man. Well, we'll say when I was like 12. 12 was really when I hit my growth spurt. I was, funny enough to say, like 12 into 13, I hit about 6'5", but I was only about 180 pounds. That was when I didn't really change my height much, but then I put on a lot of weight. But let's just say I was about 175, 180 pounds. We'll say this was in eighth grade and I was 6'5".
So, but you consciously, I think as you told me the story was your father said, you ain't going to cut it as a receiver. You're not fast enough for this. You've got to remake your body to be an offensive lineman.
Yes. And then within about 4 or 5 months, I put on like 80, 90 pounds. Yeah.
But you had today's technology to do it, and you had today's motivation to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Back then, especially with the Olympics, where it was truly amateurs only at the time, so you weren't a full-time athlete and Olympian. You had to work your 9-to-5 job every day and train on the side, okay? So you didn't have the same time as you had available now. You don't have the training techniques. You don't have the nutritionists. You don't have the weightlifting opportunities. Plus, the whole base of athletes aren't this. There's so many more people participating in sports today than there was then. So there's more opportunity. Like a Michael Phelps with his body shape and build didn't exist back then. And even if, you know, Michael Phelps existed back then, there's a very good chance he would have never gotten into a pool.
Yeah, no, you're dead right. I mean, yeah, there's no specialized training. I mean, that's the biggest thing nowadays. A lot of these kids aren't playing 4 or 5 sports anymore. I mean, I talk to a lot of these. I've had a lot of lettermen that have come on that played Penn State football, and I'll have them on the podcast, and I always ask them, you know, what was your high school recruitment like? And almost every single one of them, those guys from the 80s, 90s, even early 2000s, they say, oh, yeah, you know, I had offers in football. I even had offers in track, basketball. I played 4 sports. And it's just so funny because that's not the culture now. It's like, okay, your kid's going to play football. Boom, at 7 years old, he's going to have a trainer 2 times a week. He's not wasting his time on basketball, baseball, you know, all football, that type of thing. So I think you're right. I think that has impacted you know, how, I mean, it makes people better. Is it as fun? And I think it burns a lot of people out on their sport that they're competing in, but it doesn't make them overall better at that sport. Obviously, when you were able to specialize, train that from the time you were 7, 8 years old, you have a much more likely chance to be elite.
Exactly. And I think there's so many more people, young people participating in sports. So there's a larger sample size and there's more opportunity for those freak type of athletes. And as you go into sport, I think one of the best sports to use as an example is golf, which for many years was for the elite only, the rich, the country club set. Mm. And, you know, in my lifetime, that completely changed over. And I believe it's all about Tiger Woods. He came out and he changed the game. Not only was he very talented, but he did the things to transform his body to become an elite athlete. Now you see how many golfers out there, they are huge, Landon.
Yeah. And, you know, Jim, I was finding myself saying this the other day. I was out there with our former kicker, Alex Falcons. We were playing at Mountain View, one of the courses around here. It's a public course. And I said, man, you know, why did so many people have to start playing golf after COVID? Now it's all crowded. And then he looks at me and goes, didn't you just start playing golf after COVID? I'm like, yeah, no, that's beside the point, though. I am a part of that group, but now I'm mad that I didn't get in earlier. Because you know, you're right, it golf exploded. And now it's like, and I'll talk to people, they're like, man, 15 years ago at a public course, you know, for the most part, unless you're playing like Sunday on a nice day, you weren't backed up waiting all the time. Now, if you go to a public course nowadays, you're always waiting, backed up. I know it's kind of off topic, but I guess I have to go on a little bit of a salty Landon rant about how backed up public courses are because so many people want to play golf now, Jim. So I'm all for the sport growing. I love it. I'm using it to my advantage, taking guys out golfing for my YouTube channel. But hey, I am I have beef with the amount of people that have made their way into the golf world.
Well, I tell you what, it's different. Actually, golf did reach its peak years ago. There's actually fewer people, but I need to bring you out here to really? Berwick. Yes, yes, there are. It's the game actually peaked many years ago, and golf courses are actually closing throughout the country, many of them.
Oh, I wouldn't know. I wouldn't know, Jim. I wouldn't know the way that these courses are packed in my and from what I see. But why is that really? So is it actually a downtrend? Because the word on the street that I thought was that there was just this huge uptick in golfers.
No. It actually, I'm not sure if it peaked with Tiger Woods, but around that era, it seems like there are certain times in certain sports. I remember, you know, I'm going to go back about 40 years ago, tennis, there was a tennis boom. It seemed like everybody wanted to go play tennis. Then there was a golf boom. And I don't know now if it's like your generation, I'll blame you again, don't have the patience for a long round of golf. And it's why the golf and I think the PGA, they actually have a promotion called Play Nine, where just play nine holes. It's much quicker, obviously. You don't have to devote pretty much, you know, 5 hours to go play golf. You could do it in a much shorter time span by playing nine holes. And they're doing this to try to get more people out there, especially young people. So it really depends on where you are, where you're located. Like apparently in State College, you still, you know, you get the demand, you get everybody showing up on the course.
Yeah, no, you do. And especially, I'm talking, students aren't even back yet. So I can't even imagine what's going to happen football weekends. If I try to get me a nice tee time on a Friday, it's done. It's over. But no, that's an interesting point to make, though, that my generation doesn't have the patience. I probably agree with that. We are a generation that does love instant gratification. And I'd say golf is probably the furthest sport away from instant gratification. Because even once you're like quote unquote good, you can still go out there and suck. So it's like you're not getting any gratification from golf. So honestly, that really is a good point as to why it may not be doing as well these days. But you know, I'm curious to see how it's going to keep. Because I will tell you from a Gen Z standpoint, what is huge now is YouTube golf. Is all these different platforms, whether it's like Bryson DeChambeau, he makes a ton of content. He had Donald Trump on. They went golfing. I mean, that's cool transformational stuff. But, at the same time, there's all these other golfers And there's a couple like Barstool Sports channels that has a golfer, and he basically takes guys out, does nine holes with them, whether it's professional golf, other sports, gets, you know, kind of learn their background a little bit. So that is definitely growing in the Gen Z world.
I have one last comment on it. Well, I'll do that when we come back.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, general manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.
Welcome to Landon and Jim versus the World, brought to you by Bobby Rahal Honda of State College. Visit us at our West College Avenue showroom or BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com. Allow us to demonstrate our commitment to excellence. Bobby Rahal Honda of State College, driven by a higher standard.
Hello and welcome back to Landon and Jim versus the World. He's Landon, I'm Jim. Somehow we morphed our conversation into golf. It feels like we do that a lot, Landon, which is all right. It's an interest we both have. A couple of interesting things. You mentioned like at a state college, how busy it is. I golf here with my buddy. We go during the week, okay? It's not in the week. We go during the week. We play 18 holes in less than 3 hours. And we couldn't play, I think it was last week or the week before. So we said, something we don't normally do. Let's play on the weekend. So we said, but let's go later in the day. So we went out at 5 o'clock. Okay. 5 o'clock. Nobody's on the course. It's a public course. Nobody in front of us, nobody behind us, Landon.
I will say, and I'm making this complaint after I am talking about I believe 2 p.m. Sunday tea time. So I was out there with all the husbands trying to stay away from their wives and take as long as possible. It's like lining up every golf shot. I'm like, hey, come on, let's go. And it's like, man, I'm trying to take as long as possible before I have to go back home. That's basically what I hear. So it's, yeah, you know, you're right. And in my opinion, there is nothing better than dusk golf. When that sun starts to set, especially you're on a hole that's kind of elevated, you get to overlook a beautiful course. It starts to get a little bit cooler. There's nothing that beats a nice, and then the sunset golf, maybe you spank a nice drive down the middle and you're feeling like you're on top of the world. And then you hit your nice drive and then you duff your wedge shot. you thought you were going to be on in two on a par four. Now you're on in four, putting for bogey. And honestly, I'm being generous for myself, possibly double bogey on most days. I digress. It's definitely not a humbling sport. The most out of any I've ever played.
Well, again, here locally, you don't want to hear it, but I was out golfing Monday evening, and we 4 o'clock went out. There was a league playing on the back nine, so we played the front nine and the front nine only in less than an hour and a half. So that is the golf that I enjoy. All right, we're getting like off topic. I'm not sure how many folks are interested in our talk. A couple little couple tidbits from this week, Landon, and you sent me a little tidbit on Tom Brady. I'm not sure if we should take this seriously or not. Tom Brady talks about he would come back for the right opportunity.
I don't know if he's just trolling. I think he's got the right opportunity right now. I think he's making like over $10 million with Fox. It's like 8, 9, 10 million. It's somewhere around there per year. Actually, it might be more than that, but he's taking Greg Olson's spot. Greg Olson got bumped down from the top dude to now the second dude. And I think actually his pay went from $8 million down to $2 million for Greg Olson. So he's probably not the biggest Tom Brady fan, nor is his family right now. But Tom Brady's got such a sweet deal. But I mean, in my opinion, it's one of those things where it's like he is the ultra competitor. It's got to be killing him right now not to be playing football. I'm sure like camp, and you asked me, you know, how much do you miss camp? And I said, I miss it, but the camp aspect, not as much. Tom Brady's a sicko in the head. He'd probably say he misses camp so much and misses being in the facility for not, 10 hours a day, that's 12 hours a day. I would completely believe that. So do I actually think he's going to come back again? Probably not, but I'm sure it's fun for him to be floating those things out there and kind of just toying with people.
But could you not see a good team with an injury, okay, Patrick Mahomes, God forbid, breaks a leg. Here's this great team that just needs a quarterback. Do you doubt that Brady could do it?
I think he'd be really intrigued. I'm not going to lie. In a situation like that later in the season, tell him he needs to come in and it's basically playoff Brady time. That's real tempting to a guy like Tom. I mean, that's when you talk about addicts, he is addicted to competing. I mean, he is an addict when it comes to competing, and you start throwing around the word Super Bowl and playoffs, Tom Brady starts to probably jitter a little bit. And, you know, something inside of him gets warm and fluffy when he hears Super Bowl and playoffs. So I think it's a possibility. Do I think it's going to happen? No. But would he truly consider that? I think he would, Jim.
All right. You got to experience sports at a high level. Okay. Is there anything that can replace that adrenaline of being on the field with 100,000 people watching you perform, Landon, and you make the block, Nick Singleton takes off for 75 yards for a touchdown? Is there anything that can compare to that feeling?
If you're talking that feeling, no. If you're talking about a feeling of stress and competing and that heart beating, I'll give you this. A 6-foot putt when you're listen, I swear, I kid you not. A 6-to-4-foot putt when there is money on the line and it's a 2-man scramble. So not only is the pressure on you, but your teammates looking at you, counting on you. Jim, I'm not gonna lie, the other day I was golfing with a couple of the guys on the team, and we were just playing for dinner afterwards. And I was on the team with Nick Dawkins, and we were in the sand bunker, right? I'm sorry, we might be getting off topic, but it's a story with the football player. So, you know, Nick hits his shot, and it's about 15 yards from the green, I'd say. And so it's like, we can chip on, but I'm right next to the green, but I'm in the sand trap. And, you know, Doc goes, I can't hit it out of the sand trap. I don't think I can make that. And I've been hitting it pretty good out of the sand trap. I'm like, no, like, come on, we're way closer. Let's take this shot. And we might have been actually closer, like 30 yards away from the green, but it's a manageable chip shot for us, for his ball. I said, no, let's go with my ball. He's like, all right, you better hit it out. So, I mean, my heart starts beating. He goes at his, doesn't go anywhere. I mean, moves a couple inches in the stand. I get up, Jim, and I get way too under it. The ball just goes up in the air, comes right back down in the sand trap. I mean, I was feeling my heart beat out of my chest. And then I got to look over at Doc, and he just kind of shakes his head. It's like, damn, we ended up losing. That type of thing is up there. Is it the same as 107,000 with Nick Singleton running on the sideline? Maybe not. But I had to give that contrast of, when the game's on the line, when you're playing for something in a golf game, especially in a scramble with someone depending on you, things can get a little heated. So I think, Doc, we still got a little bit of trust issues after that round.
Well, you know, I think you just described, though, why us old guys still golf, okay? It's still that ability to compete in some way. And it always strikes me when you play in a tournament and it's like a 4-man scramble, and you get the four guys standing over a putt, reading the putt as if, you know, this is the be-all, end-all of the world, all right? But just the fact that you're still competing. But it also reminds me of a great quote. Do you know the name Lee Trevino?
I do know that name.
Okay, great old-time golfer, funny guy. And they were asking him after a big tournament about the pressure, you know, playing for a lot of money, so. And he says, this is not pressure. You want to know pressure? You got a $100 bet and you only got $20 in your pocket.
That's a great one. Jim, this kind of funnels, right? You want to talk about pressure playing golf. How about Tom Kim in the Olympics? So Tom Kim, and they have some videos of him after, which is kind of sad. He's in this media room and he's actually crying tears. You can see him wiping them away. Mm-hmm. He needed to medal in the Olympics in golf to avoid military service that is mandatory in where he's from in South Korea. He did not medal. So I don't know how it exactly works, but basically he is going to have to go serve in the near future for like 18 months. And the problem is, you know, there, it's not like at all, like he's probably not going to like die, anything like that. But you know, what people have seen in previous times with people that have to go serve, especially golfers, when you take 18 months off from golfing, it is really, really difficult for your game to get back to where it was previous to that. So I think that definitely hurt. But if you want to talk about pressure, you better win or you're going to war. I mean, that might be top tier pressure, Jim. That might be more than a $20 putt.
Military service, yes, that is pressure. Which all of this golf, it reminds me of an excellent golf joke, Landon, which I'm going to have to tell you off the air when we're done recording. So you reminded me of that. We'll hit that later. Just a couple other tidbits, things going on. And I know you're not the big baseball guy, but I am. This is incredible what's going on. Now, maybe by the time you listen to this, our show, it may have changed. But as of Monday night, the Chicago White Sox have lost 21 games in a row. Okay. That does not happen in baseball. Even the very best teams, you win 100 games, you're like the very best team, which means you lose 60 games. Okay. The absolute worst teams in the world typically will, if they lose 100 games, which is considered the real mark of how bad you are, you still win 60 games on the year. Mm-hmm. The measuring stick for futility in baseball are my loving Mets, my Mets, okay? They were an expansion team in 1962. They won 40 games and lost 120, okay? Hmm. That's a winning percentage of 250, which means they would win one out of four games, all right? The Chicago White Sox are on their way to breaking that record of futility.
Oh, not a part of the record books you want to be in, Jim. The losing side, not fun.
They were god-awful before this streak. But think about that, Landon. How in baseball could you lose 21 games in a row? Their winning percentage is .237, which would be the worst in modern day baseball. Now, to get a record worse, you actually have to go back to the 1899 Cleveland Spiders, who went 20-134. Okay. But I still claim, remember a few years ago when the Cleveland Guardians were the Cleveland Indians?
Yes.
And they were changing their name and trying to. I said they should have changed their name to the Cleveland Spiders. Is that not the coolest name? Just think how cool a mascot and logo they could have with spiders as their name.
Yeah, I think you could do some cool. You could put some spiders around the arena, the ballpark, and have it kind of climbing up. You can do some cool stuff. And I understand your passion for it. You were probably there for their opening game as the Spiders back in the 1890s. So, I understand why you feel passionate about that, Jim. That makes sense.
Oh, Landon, you won't let that go.
No, I never will.
Here's hoping the White Sox win a few games before the season ends. And, they can – so my Mets could maintain the record as having the worst record. It's the lovable Mets, the lovable losers for so many years. That's why, we want to keep that record.
Would you compare, like I said, I don't claim to know a lot about baseball. I went to a couple O's games. I'm from right outside of Baltimore. Would you say that you guys were the Detroit Lions of MLB?
Oh, my God, worse. All right, that's got to be the final note, Landon. Thank you all for listening. Join us next week on Landon and Jim versus the World.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, General Manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.